the night. I'm in mine.
So what can you discern about the Beatles from that song? You can discern that they're pretty self-confident. At least that's according to a new book from James Pennebaker, where, you know, we use all kinds of things to try to figure out people's personality and what they're thinking. But pronouns, those words that often get eliminated from your Google search strings, are often or can be some of the most telling words that we use. His new book is called The Secret Life of Pronouns. And James Pennebaker joins us now. He's professor of psychology at the University of Texas, Austin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So let's talk about the use of pronouns. And I wanted to start with the language of natural disasters, I guess, since that's most recently on everyone's mind. I'm sure that you've seen a lot of the coverage of Hurricane Irene and seen a lot of our public officials, including President Obama and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, talking about what's going on in their state. What can we learn from that?
Well, a good rule of thumb is if there's a natural disaster going on, politicians will use we. And actually, a lot of people use we. Somehow, natural disasters have this ability to give us a sense of community. And so we is the common term.
Well, that makes sense to me. But a lot of things, as I was reading through your books, seem to be counterintuitive. And one of them was this use of the word I. You know, this is something that President Obama has been criticized by a number of people in the GOP, that he uses I. And me, the personal pronoun, too much. And this is something where you actually went and crunched the numbers on this.
It turns out he uses the word I, or first person singular, I, me, and my, at rates as it's the lowest of any modern president, and by quite a bit. He rarely uses I, me, and my compared to others, compared to George Bush, compared to Reagan, compared to Clinton, compared to anybody. And one of the interesting issues is that use of I, me, and my actually suggests being more personal, more self-attentive, self-focused, that someone who's actually arrogant or cold or distant or even someone who's viewed as a leader tends to use these words at lower rates.
Not using them actually means that you're confident.
Exactly. And it's interesting, at the top of the show, you were playing the Beatles' I, Me, My. And what that is suggesting is they're probably feeling anxious, self-aware, questioning themselves, as opposed to being confident or arrogant.
Interesting. Well, we're speaking with James Pennebaker. Excuse me. He's author of The Secret Life of Pronouns, which is a truly fascinating book. I got to be honest with you. Let's talk about how you arrived at these conclusions, because it turns out that it's only because of computer technology that you were able to do this kind of research.
That's right. Several years ago, I was doing a lot of work on how people write about traumatic experience and needed a way to analyze people's language and couldn't find a program. So with the help of some students, wrote a computer program that analyzed language and calculated how much people used words such as pronouns and articles and other of these very small words we ignore. And I essentially stumbled across these findings that function words are used very differently than regular nouns and verbs that we typically do pay attention to.
And by function words, what words does that include?
That includes, in addition to pronouns like he, she, you, articles, a, an, and the, prepositions, to, of, for, negations, no, not, never, and a handful of other. They're the smallest words in our vocabulary. There's only 150 common ones. But they account for almost 60% of the words that we say and hear every day. But they're processed in the brain differently, so you just don't hear them. They shape what we're saying. They're not the content of what we're saying, but they really shape them.
And I think what one of the things that was fascinating in your research is how it shook out according to gender. And I was especially amused by the way that, I mean, you looked at things like Quentin Tarantino and Shakespeare and discovered that they're not all that great at writing for women.
That's true. And we find some women who aren't very good knowing the voice of men, for example, Nora Ephron. But what's interesting about this is that we all have this stereotype of how men versus women use language. For example, most of us think men use I more, or that women use we more, or that men use words that suggest cognitive words, cognitive thinking, like because, cause, effect. And all of these are wrong. It turns out that women use I at much higher rates. Ironically, there's no difference between men and women in terms of we usage. And women use cognitive words, words like because, cause, and effect, at much higher rates than do men. So what we think people use language, the way we think they do, goes very much against what actually happens.
And you discovered that to a certain extent, this research is a bit of a lie detector. How does that work?
Well, what we've done is we've gone through and we've done many studies, and other labs have as well, comparing people who are telling the truth versus lying. We often induce people to tell the truth versus lie. And people use words really differently when they're telling the truth versus lying. For example, two of the best markers of telling the truth are use of I words. You can see this, the word I seems to pop up a lot. And also a group of conjunctions and prepositions, words that we call exclusive words. These can be words like except, without, but, exclude. And these are words that are making a distinction between what is in a category and what's not in a category. It's a marker of more complex thinking.
You're speaking with James. We're speaking with James Pennebaker. He's author of The Secret Life of Pronouns, professor of psychology also at the University of Texas, Austin. We have about a minute left, Professor, and I'm wondering if you found out through your research things about yourself that you didn't want to accept. Did you go back and research your own writing?
I did. I've gone back and analyzed my letters of recommendation to find out what I'm really thinking. Can you tell the good, the really true letters of recommendation versus those that I'm just trying to be nice? I analyzed my relationship with family members. I mean, it's been a very interesting journey.
Well, could you tell?
I can. And one of the most. For example, the answer is yes, I can tell now. So, for example, when I use a high rate of positive emotion words, it means that I'm not as enthusiastic about the person as if I'm just being factual.
You're faking it. James Pennebaker is author of the new book, The Secret Life of Pronouns, and he's professor of psychology at the University of Texas, Austin. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet.
And we want your reports. We promise not to analyze them. Give us your storm reports at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post your comment at thetakeaway.org. And you can also take a picture or a video of what's going on in your state and then send it to our website. It's downloadable at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes, our iPhone app, that is. And we're still hearing from many of you about the storm. A listener in Commerce, Michigan writes, the question is, who would you blame for an undercall in terms of forecasting? How much more money would recovery be then? Give us your thoughts. I'm Celeste Headlee. John Hockenberry's out this week. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.